57. "Admit you were surprised when you opened the door," Molly said to Crow. They were in the small kitchen of his Airbnb. He'd made coffee for them and then poured a little whiskey out of his flask and into the mugs before he brought them to the table. "I got that doorbell cam thing on my phone," Crow said. "The way I set it up, the range extends to the street. So I saw you pull up. My world, you don't much like surprises." Molly saw him almost smile then. Almost, but not quite. "But there are exceptions to every rule," he said. She sipped some coffee. The whiskey made it go down much easier. Moth to a flame, she thought. "I just wanted to thank you," she said, "for being concerned about Blair."
"Not that it's helping her very much."
"Still," Molly said.
"That the only reason you came?" Crow said.
"Sorry," Molly said, and shrugged. "All I got."
"I'm not sorry," Crow said. They both knew what he meant.
"Well, I am," Molly said. She'd taken a shower and fixed her hair and her face and put on one of her favorite shirts and her favorite pair of white jeans, 7 brand, a gift from Sonny Randall.
"I should never have let it happen," Molly said.
"We both let it happen," Crow said. "And we both know that, by then, there was no stopping it."
"There's always a way to stop it," Molly said. "I could have said no."
"No to me, or no to yourself?"
He poured a little more whiskey into his mug. He offered it to Molly. She shook her head.
"I should have said no to it, to us, to everything," she said.
"But that's in the past, where it belongs." She absently rubbed her arm where she'd been shot.
"I just finally came to the conclusion that I needed to stop blaming you, being mean to you. Jesse's right. I'm mostly angry at myself."
Crow stared at her. Again, he almost smiled. "You read Hemingway?" he said.
"Didn't see that coming."
Molly told him she assumed just about everybody had read at least one Hemingway book. "I'm not a big reader," Crow said. "But I read just about everything he ever wrote. And one time he wrote that what's moral is what feels good after. That's the part most people quote. But he followed the line up by saying that what's immoral is what makes you feel bad after."
"I remember both lines," Molly said.
"So, which one is it with you?" he said, "if we're speaking about us."
"There is no us," Molly said, "other than the us working this case together."
"But there was."
"For one night," she said. "The one night when I cheated on a man I've loved pretty much my whole life. I don't cheat on anything, Wilson. I'd tell the kid at the checkout counter if they somehow undercharged me at the grocery store. If the government sends too much money after we file our taxes, I calculate the difference and send it back. That's me, not that night."
She drank the last of her coffee.
"With me, the immoral beats the moral that Hemingway wrote about all day long," Molly said.
Now Crow smiled. "We could do it again," he said, "just to make sure."
"Could," she said, "but can't, and won't."
"But not because you don't want to."
"I didn't come here to have this conversation," Molly said to him.
"We seem to be having it anyway," Crow said.
She wanted to do something right now to change the energy in the room. Now that they were working together, she had started to wonder all over again what it would be like to be alone with him, to be this close to him. No, she thought, that wasn't right. She knew exactly what it would be like. Coming here had just confirmed it.
"What I want," she said finally, her voice sounding thick, "is to go home and check in with the hospital one last time on Blair, and then get into bed."
"You could do that here."
"No,"
Molly said. Now she smiled. There.
I said it.
Can I at least walk you to your car? Crow said.
No,
Molly said again. Saying it was actually easy. Once you got the hang of it.